Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
That's all to come. I'm David Mooney, and with me this week I've got City fan Richard Burns.
Or have you?
Or have I, yeah. Well, there's a mute symbol on his...
No, that wasn't a delay. That's because I was on mute. What an idiot.
Do you want me to do that again, or do you want me to leave this in?
I'm very happy to just say hello, and then you can decide what you edit.
Let's do that then, shall we?
This sounds massively like the start of the show before the music starts, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, it does. It does, yeah. Let's go again, shall we?
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
3 more points for Manchester City in their quest to be in the giant Champions League table again next season. But it was a bit of a weird Friday night under the lights at the Etihad. Good bits, bad bits and bits in between. We'll discuss it all on today's Blue Moon podcast. Then next up, it's already relegated Southampton at St Mary's. We'll look ahead to that one and assess the race to finish in the top five as City look the most in control with 3 games left. And this weekend is only the 4th time in Premier League history that City will play against a team that's already gone down. So Sam Rosbottom is on the case to tell us about the other 3, and weirdly, they're all slightly significant games in one way or another. That's all to come. I'm David Mooney, and with me this week I've got City fan Richard Burns.
Hello, David. How are you doing?
Not too bad, thank you. Which I've now laughed all over, which has ruined any sort of semblance of continuity. So there's going to have to be some sort
like
of...
Did that not sound like the first time I'd said hello to you?
No, it didn't, funnily enough. So, I mean, we're going to have to go with it, and we'll see what the edit comes out like. And we've also got from Sporting News, you've heard him already, Don Farrell.
Hello, everyone. How are you doing?
Not too bad, thank you. Not too bad. Jack Grealish has spent his weekend in Germany this week, seeing Rod Stewart, of all people. So, 2 questions. What's the furthest you've been for a gig? Or if you've not been very far, what's the gig that you've been to see that would surprise us the most? Don?
I went to Rome to watch Bruce Springsteen a couple of years ago.
That feels like a good gig.
Oh, it was incredible. Yeah. So we had like a couple of like sort of a long weekend out there. I mean, it's hardly like I'm doing a deep cut here, but Rome, really good city.
Yeah. Oh, whoa! We know what the hot takes straight away.
Impressive. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was the weekend when Arsenal didn't beat. So City were crowned champions while I was out there as well. So that was a. We were on a food and drink tour of Rome when Forest took points of Arsenal. So yeah,
excellent.
Good times had by all.
Yeah, excellent. Love Rome. Richard, any far flung gigs or any surprising gigs?
Far flung, not really. Just to complete the hat trick for Rome, by the way. Also love Rome. could take that as an endorsement for the Rome Tourist Board. No, really far flung. I think the furthest I've specifically travelled for a gig was to Leeds to see Morrissey, which was less good than the better, really. Well, he was good when I still liked him, and we'll leave that there. Most surprising, this is only a surprise and also a spoiler if you've not seen the end of Searching for Sugar Man. I saw Sixto Rodriguez live at the Apollo. So yeah,
I love that someone's watched 40 minutes of that and they listen to this podcast now and going, you saw what?
Yeah, it was rubbish, by the way. Absolutely, absolutely rubbish. Was clock watching, waiting for it to end. But you know,
you don't have to be there. You can go home.
Yeah, but then it's like, at what point do you cut your losses, and at what point does it just make do you get more value from staying?
If you're not enjoying the experience, go home. That's
Rich is there like, sorry, when does he douse himself in petrol and set himself on fire? Does he not do that anymore? Because if he could, because this is shit.
Yeah, spice up the evening a bit. Speaking of evenings that needed spicing up, I don't really think, as it got towards the end of that Wolves game, Dom, that we needed any nerviness thrown into that. Because like City seemed... It was a really weird night. City were in control, they were out of control, and then it went mad at the end.
Yeah, it was a funny one because I thought the atmosphere was brilliant. And I know we'll talk about the fan protest in a bit, but I do think those things are linked of like... particularly down that end of the ground where everyone's kind of got a bit of a common purpose. They're in something together beyond just supporting the football team. That like, there was a bit of that away game vibe, wasn't there? Because Akanji came on and then they sung the Ederson and Ake Best Defence in Europe song for about 20 minutes solid. And it was all just like, this is nice, isn't it? It's a nice summer evening.
The feeling though, because the game itself, like it was really in the balance, and the fans are behaving as if it's like, oh, this is it, the breeze in this one.
Right. Yeah. So it's interesting because I wasn't working at the game. I actually went and sat with my parents because, you know, I need to practice going to enough games to keep a season ticket. I was thinking this is crap, and I think from what I've seen and read after the game, I think I've got one of the more positive views on the whole performance of anyone. But there was definitely an element that it got a little bit end-of-term feel with all that singing. And then there was like about 10 minutes ago, Wolf slung a ball into the box and it's like, hang on a minute, it'd be rubbish if they drew here. Mm. And it was, you know, it was only 1-0. But yeah, as David, you've released your documentary on the Ewood Park promotion this week. City are paying tribute to the Ewood Park goalposts week in, week out at the minute, which is lovely. All's well that ends well.
Richard, it feels like the perfect metaphor for the season as a whole because City just about got over the line. It looks as though they're going to get over the line in the Champions League push now. We'll come on to that a bit later on, but they're the most in control of it. There were hairy moments. There were great chances created by Wolves that they didn't take. But on the whole, I actually thought, in terms of a performance, I actually agree with Dom. City were largely stable, but for two or three big Wolves chances in there. And I wonder if that kind of clouds the judgment a bit.
Yeah, I think so, and it's almost like you're contradicting yourself to say it almost. But I agree. Like the takeaway that me and my dad had when we were walking away, and the sort of conversation that we were having was, City really made themselves solid again, and this phase that they went through, in a very long phase, and I suppose that, like, arguably the biggest part of the season, really.
Well,
is
how that, long can a phase be? You know, when people say, "Oh, it's a phase," like if it's the majority of the time, it can't be a phase.
Yeah, no, it's the most significant part of the season, I guess, that has contributed to where City are. Like, there was that feeling in every game that they're going to start it, and you know that at some point they're going to give up chances through their own mistakes. There's going to be a dodgy back pass. There's going to be some bad communication. There's going to be somebody not in the right position, and we will give up chances to the opposition. And I left the Wolves game feeling like that has largely gone. And obviously you've got examples in like the Forest game where the second one that Gibbs White hits the post with came from a City mistake. But generally, they feel less likely they're going to shoot themselves in the foot. And yet, Wolves did have chances that weren't necessarily from the brightest defending from City. And so I'm wary of like maybe backfilling narrative here in the sense that we're in better form, and so scraping through a game that could have gone the other way, like using that as an example of being more solid when they weren't necessarily so. Like they could have conceded. The one that, and forgive me, I forget who the players were, but that one where Wolves got through and they completely messed up the pass, like that should be a goal for a professional footballer every day of the week. The chances it hit the post, like were good chances. So, I think, I find it a really strange one to analyse because I absolutely agree City were largely in control. But when that control has at least three good chances for the opposition that had they gone in, you end up with a different result. Maybe it wasn't quite as controlling as
it felt. Doesn't quite feel it, does it? Yeah. Yeah. That said, though, Richard, it's I think, you know, it's really nice that given that we know he's leaving at the end of the season, and it's really fitting that before he does go, Kevin De Bruyne has had like that match-winning moment in the running.
Yeah, I mean, I was absolutely delighted because every time he does that, every good game that he has at the Etihad, and obviously there's only one of those left, and every good contribution, like, you're very aware that this might be the last time we see this from him, and the last chance that, or one of the last chances that he gets to really sort of be given his flowers. And yeah, it's so nice that it was decisive as well. It's not like he's come on and pop the fifth in an easy 5-0 win. He scored a really decisive goal that helps City get towards what has become the objective for the season of getting to the Champions League. So he was magnificent in the Palace game. I wasn't able to go to that game. I was absolutely gutted that I'd missed a bit of a virtuoso performance. So I was really happy to be in the stadium for another De Bruyne goal, and it'd be lovely if he could do something similar against Bournemouth to really sign off. But if not, he's got his moment. And we've been able to celebrate him in-game rather than just waiting for his sort of highlights reel and presentation of whatever he'll get from the club. It's lovely. Really happy for him.
Dom, it's hard though, isn't it? Because he's made it plainly clear he doesn't like the decision. Guardiola gets asked about it fairly regularly about kind of the mood around the decision and everything else. It's not an easy end to this City career, given like what he is to City and what he's been at City and kind of where he is now and the kind of odd performance he's put in at the end of this season. It's just a difficult situation that actually I think everybody's managing quite well.
Yeah, I think a big part of what makes De Bruyne the player he is, maybe not a big part, but a significant ingredient is, you know, people talk about when you get angry, De Bruyne, you know, when he's sort of turned pink and he's raging in games, that's can sometimes be the real sweet spot for his unbelievable performances. You know, there are some, like, for example, David Silva was, his great midfield partner, was never going to leave like De Bruyne has, because he's, you know, quiet, unassuming, cool, calm. Silva would never have given interviews. I mean, he didn't really give interviews. Had us all believing he didn't speak English for years. you know, whereas I think, you know, I mean, I wasn't there myself. I think I'm right in thinking that at the Everton game, De Bruyne kind of made a point of going to speak, you know, let him talk, you might say. So, but that personality is part of who he is as a footballer, and it's probably unrealistic to think that wouldn't be there at this time when he leaves, because of course he still thinks he can do it, and the evidence of the last few weeks is that he can, because he is pain-free. But he's pain-free now. How often has he been pain-free in the last two seasons as one of your very top earners in a squad that the age profile has ticked a bit higher than where it should be? I think it is the right decision for everyone. I saw the latest link I've seen for him was like to go to Napoli. Like, if he went to Serie A and ripped it up, that'd be cool. I just think it is the right decision for everyone else, but you know, for all parties. And the fact that he's putting these performances in, he has maybe an FA Cup final to put a decisive performance in. There's no ideal way to end a link between a club and very arguably its greatest ever player. But because he's the greatest ever player, maybe that link never properly ends. But I think, I agree with you that everyone's managing it as well as they can, given the person that he is and the personality that he is.
Yeah, not an easy finish either, that goal.
Yeah, I mean, how many times did the ball bounce from Doku's cross to it going in the net? It was like
over that 6 yards, you know.
Yeah, it was like skimming stones, wasn't it? You know, if you absolutely nail one of them into the sea, it was like Doku's cross was like that, which is like, you know, it'd be impressive from a stone skimming point of view, but I reckon De Bruyne would have liked it a bit more on a plate. But I mean, for God's sake, we've spoken so much about Doku's end product. I can't be saying here going, he actually got an assist, but the way the ball bounced displeased me. I mean, yeah, well played by both of them. But yeah, it was visually a bit of a weird goal. I agree.
Yeah, my dad listens to this, so it would be remiss of me not to mention that he used to take me to Debdale Park when I was a kid to skim stones on the reservoir there. used to dig up stones with his car keys, and we'd decide whether that was a good skimmer or not, and then he'd throw
that's very important. We should add a really good stone skimmer. I think that's like
great stone skimmer.
I think that's a dad skill to have, which I don't have yet.
I've never successfully skimmed a stone. It's very sad.
Yeah, better get learning, fellas. Better get learning. let's talk about Bernardo, because Dom, he's had a bit of a tough season, but he deserves credit for how he's knitting the team together now. Because, like, if Guardiola needs a job doing, Bernardo gets it.
Yeah, he's been a phenomenon. He's brilliant. And I think, obviously, rightly, all this attention is on De Bruyne, but, and, you know, all the talk about where's his statue going and all the rest of it. And De Bruyne is probably that. De Bruyne is probably going to get a pitch at the training ground, isn't he? He's that second tier, the Gundogan, Yaya Toure, and, you know, those guys. You know, City fans very, very lucky with all of these guys who've been around. But, yeah, I think he's been brilliant, and he's always been integral to, like, the very best performances, like, you know. People talk about maybe 18-19 was the best season of the Guardiola. The best game was the Liverpool win. Bernardo was just... That was the performance. And he's always been there with things like that. He has always also been someone who has tended to want to leave most summers. And I've been surprised by some of the negativity towards him, given all that he's accomplished. Now, I think part of the reason for that is if there's a fella who's pondering leaving most summers, which, you know, I guess is fine... that maybe isn't great PR with fans in the way that someone who looks like, for example, a Pablo Zabaleta type figure who moves to Manchester and eats fish and chips and thinks it's just amazing. So there's that element. And I think also we've got to a point where nobody in their right mind, particularly with Doku and Savinho and Marmoush about now, no one wants to see him playing the right wing ever again in his life. But that role that he thinks, you know, Guardiola will play him everywhere, and he had the misfortune of being played everywhere in the worst bit of the season when everyone else was injured. You know, Bernardo could really have done with a hamstring injury at that point, because he just had to keep going back to the well, and he looked really bad in that period, no doubt. But playing in the position now that he likes best, which is playing next to the holding midfielder, and there has been no holding midfield most of the season, but now they've got into this sort of settled system with Kovacic playing his best football of the whole season. And I think the last two home games, Bernardo's been phenomenal. Really, really good performance. I mean, I know Kovacic got the man of the match in the ground against Wolves, but I thought it was an open and shut case. It was Bernardo, particularly when he was trying to time waste at the end, and we know he's got lots of good time waste in his locker. When he tried to win that throw-in but missed the Wolves play, so it looked like he just booted it really hard at someone about 10 rows back. That was very good fun. He also did like a proper Peter Kay Avic clearance out of the box towards the end. And, you know, so he does all that. He does all the muck and nettle stuff, and he does... You know, I know people question his creativity and his goal contributions, which...
There's a moment in the first half where he makes a tackle right on the halfway line, and that probably changes the momentum of the game.
Yeah, he does everything, doesn't he? But, and again, in a team, because I know it's been well documented, he had that thing where he's like the slowest player in the league or something, over, you know, according to like all the Opta data. But if the team is organised and working, you know, it's Guardiola's positional play, and if everyone's in the right spot and their starting positions are good, you know, their starting positions to press, their starting positions when they get the ball back, he's going to be amazing. Where he wasn't great in the middle of the season was where it looked like they'd all been chucked into a particle accelerator and they're having to cover large spaces, and he's a small man that doesn't move very quickly, so, you know, that's not ideal. But as much as we know it's the end for De Bruyne and it's great, he looks like he's revving into this grand farewell. You know, every summer Bernardo might leave. This might be it for him too. I don't know. But it's been really nice to see him get back to some classic Bernardo the last few weeks.
Yeah. Richard, I promise I'm not leaving you out. And I will come to you on Bernardo in a second. But first, Dom, do you know what a particle accelerator does?
Accelerates particles, I believe,
well,
David.
That's about as much as I can tell you. But why would that be your analogy?
Because it's like everyone's just moving about all over the place, and don't you use it to sort of like smash atoms and stuff? I mean, now we've gone way off, but basically it's a load of people moving around in sort of a disorganized, chaotic manner, and you can't really make much sense out of it. I know nothing about particle accelerators. What am I doing, Richard?
Richard Bernardo, great, isn't he?
Well, he's, yeah, he plays like he's been put into a particle accelerator. don't you, at the end, isn't the point that at the end of it you find out how life began? Is that just the big one in Switzerland? Are there other particle accelerators?
Is that the Higgs boson one?
Yeah.
There's a Nick Cave song named after it, so I know that.
Yeah, that's CERN, isn't it? Yeah.
What I know David would appreciate, and the measure of how much he'll appreciate, is whether this gets edited out or not. If people who know more than us could just tweet Blue Sky, Instagram, or email the podcast about how large particle accelerators work. Anyway, yeah, Bernardo's really good. Absolutely love him. It's great to see his improvement in the back end of the season, because if he were to go this summer, it would be, as the, you know, there's been some rumours about, it would be a real shame if he were to go after a bad season for the team and for him, because it would probably cloud how well he's remembered. But I think he's one of the best players that we've had. I've absolutely loved watching him. I hope that sort of long-term desire that he had to leave doesn't cloud his legacy, because I think it's a significant one. And in many ways, like Dom referenced, like, he's not Zabaleta. He didn't seem to fall in love with the city in the same way. You can't say like he liked his Friday night chippy or whatever. But in many ways, like, I see the Bernardo story and his quality and effort and dedication to the cause in spite of wanting to leave. It's just like, it's his own version of it. It's like, it's a flip side of the same coin. You could never question his effort or dedication to the cause. And I honestly believe, although he's not on that De Bruyne or, you know, like Rodri tier, I still think it's reasonable to say the level of success that we've had in the Guardiola era would be, maybe not quite the same without Bernardo. I mean, that Dom referenced that Liverpool game in 18-19. It's just one of the absolute standout performances of modern City history. He was incredible. And at his best, he's been one of the best players in the league. Like, he's world-class at his very best. So I love him. I will be sad the day that he goes, but we've had more than our value out of him. And I'm absolutely delighted to see him picking up form. And he's a delightful player to watch when he's on song.
Yeah. I've just been to energy.gov. They say particle accelerators are devices that speed up particles that make up all matter in the universe and collide them together or into a target. This allows scientists to study those particles and forces that shape them. Specifically, particle accelerators speed up charged particles. So yeah, we'd nailed it. We had it spot on.
Apart from, he's the slowest player in the league, but anyway.
Yeah.
Let's not split atoms.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero, or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
I want to finish the Wolves game with a look at the protest because, Richard, this one didn't get as much attention as the Leicester one did. Maybe because City didn't score during it, I don't know. We had Helen on recently to explain how she'd been affected by the 10-game minimum. But there is, I feel like there is a balance to be struck here over people who don't use their ticket or don't use their tickets a lot, because there are cases where there are valid reasons to not go to the game. You're a parent, Dom's a parent, you know, jobs, work, all that sort of thing. All real life comes together to conspire sometimes to mean that you can't make it to the game. I don't know where I stand on this, because I understand the club will want those seats filled, because if they're not being filled, they could be filled by people who want to be there. But at the same time, you can't really be asking the club to judge what is a valid reason to not be there, can you?
No, I think this is really, really tough, and I very much land in the same position as you of not knowing quite where I land on it. Like, it's it doesn't really make sense as a sentence, but we'll go with it. So
sorry, carry on. Nobody noticed.
Fundamentally, right, my position, and just to be very, very clear for avoidance of doubt, I have happily taken part in both of the protests so far. I've not been able to get to some of the the stuff outside the main stand in time, but in terms of like not going to my seat and staying on the concourse, I've taken part and will continue to promote and take part in those for as long as necessary. Because I think the fundamentals of it are absolutely spot on, and I will always fall on the side of the fans against the club, because in most cases I think that's the most important thing to protect. I think the issue of like minimum number of games to go to is a really, really tricky one for the reasons that you've outlined, because there will always be genuine reasons to miss a game. And Helen, I listened to last week's podcast, Helen was brilliant. Some of the stuff that she touched on like the disproportionate effect on women, mothers, it was brilliant. I think we can always, and just to be clear, this is separate from Helen, because I'm not suggesting this is what Helen was doing. We can always personalise these things, right? So to give you an example from earlier in the season, I had to miss at very short notice, for very good reason, the Southampton game at home. And I was really, I was pretty pissed off to receive on the Sunday or the Monday an email from City, and obviously an automated one, but an email from City reminding me how many games I'm allowed to miss. Because what I know is that since 98, 99, I can count on my fingers how many games that my seat would have been completely vacant for. There's more and more games since I've become a parent. There's more and more like midweek games where I give my ticket up to my mum or my nephew. But in terms of the seat being completely vacant, which is what City emailed me about, it's probably less than 5 occasions in 25 years. And so to receive an email that said, that reminded me of my options when I can't attend a game. And I promise you, the first option was do attend the game. Like, I don't need that. And that's like, that's really, really poor. And I can't believe that City aren't able to separate that out from this issue of people who keep a ticket to go to just the big games and guarantee the final tickets. And I don't know how many people are doing that. I would presume there are some. And there is definitely a balance to strike whereby one of the points that we make in the protest, and that the fan groups have been really good in making, is that a lot of City's policies seem counter to getting the next generation of fans in. And that has to be something that we encourage. It has to be something that we protect. It has to be for the future of the club. And I can see the point that if you don't have a minimum number of games that you have to attend, then and you're just keeping a ticket without going, that ticket could have gone to somebody who is in that next generation of fans who would love to be going to games and is unable to because somebody is, for want of a better phrase, hoarding a ticket. And I can see why the club would want to stop that happening. I think what then makes it difficult to side with the club, though, is so many of their policies are not in favour of the fans, like the constant ticket rises and stuff like that. And you know, the not offering new season tickets, as has been the case for a while, that it's hard to assume the best intent on their part. And so that pushes me back towards like the fan side of, there's just got to be a better way to do this. And so I wonder whether, you know, do you take it over a longer period of time? So I'm going to have, I won't go into detail, but I would anticipate that my attendance at games will reduce in the early part of next season, maybe longer, I don't know. And like I said, I've had a season ticket since 98 and barely missed a game. So I feel like I should probably have some discretion where the club can say, okay, maybe we take this over two seasons. Like if you have two consecutive seasons where your attendance is significantly reduced, you know, like almost like being allowed to take a sabbatical. Like, do you offer my ticket up as, if I were to have a season where I know that I can't attend 10 games, should my season ticket then be offered up as what might be some kind of like flexi gold ticket or something like that? I don't know. And I don't have the answers, but I just do think that the balance at the moment doesn't rest in favor of, what
people who experience
fans.
Real life. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's my issue. And I'm worried that I've gone down too much of a track there that feels like I'm not siding with the fans. Cause just to be really, really clear, I do. I'm just trying to, I suppose trying to both sides it a little bit and see it from what is the issue they're trying to address. Mm. Is there a better way to do it?
Yeah, Dom, part of this, I'm wondering, is just, as Richard kind of says there, the blanketness of the policy rather than the policy specifically itself. Because, like, for instance, this game that we're talking about, the Wolves game, was moved to a Friday night with 38 days' notice. That's just over a month's notice. Like, you can have plans already in place to be able to go to that game for when it's originally scheduled, and then suddenly it's now a Friday night. Bournemouth, which is coming up, has been moved to a Tuesday night with 19 days notice. Like, in the modern world, that's not a lot of time to sort out. Like, when people are working different shifts, when people have health conditions, when people have, you know, children and childcare to consider, these are not real, like, these are real problems. And then to make the demand that you have to be able to attend a specific number of games in that climate feels really punishing.
Yeah, and that's before we get to the idea that next June, when the fixtures come out, if you want to make sure you're attending every single game, you're going to want to block out from Friday night to Monday night on 19 different weekends. It's, yeah. There's a lot going on here. So, I mean, I would broadly go along with the idea that if, and I know there's suggestions the club do have genuine concerns about this, if there are people who are buying a season ticket and leaving the seat empty for more than half of the home games, I can see how that might be viewed as a problem. And it's denying people who would otherwise like to go to a sold-out game the chance to, and it's an empty seat. Fine, I get that. But that isn't just what we're talking about here, is it? Because, okay, so, I mean, again, Richard apologised for personalising it, and that's, I guess I have to as well. I have a season ticket that I've had since 1993. Now, obviously, with my job in covering football, that's pretty much been, I've worked weekends as long as I've, been
worked.
In. Yeah, you're going to go, what do I work in? That field where you use words, you just can't think of any. Yeah, since I've been in gainful employment. Yeah, so, and now, a lot of those seasons before my job was, I mean, certainly over the last few years, my job has been a lot more like covering City than I did previously. So a lot of the games I'm at, but I'm not in my season ticket seat because I'm, the Wi-Fi's not good up there. but yeah, so I've had to manage this and like thinking, what games, it'll be a long time since I went to every game in a season, probably not since I left uni. But I used to get to probably more than half. And would make sure, a mate or someone was buying a ticket off us, friends of the family, not through ticket exchange, until the last few years when I've been to a handful because I've been working. But this season, my seat has been full every single game. I have been to the minority of those games. Mm. The lad who's having the ticket is a family friend who's like 18, 19, and he's, going, watching City, great. I mean, that's good for him because if he wanted to get a season ticket himself as an 18-year-old, in terms of price and availability, that's not really happening at the moment, is it? So that seat's full, and he's going on that. What is the club's issue there? And if it's the idea that you want to open it up to other people, fine. The other thing I've noticed also with the 10-game minimum, anecdotally, I know of plenty of people who are now, with the prices having gone up so much until this price freeze this season, they share a season ticket. Mm. Now, the idea you've got going, the maths on that look really sort of, snide to me, that if you've got two people sharing a season ticket, they can't do that anymore because one of them is going to have to go to 9 games and they're going to lose. So that sort of thing doesn't really work either. The other thing for me is, with my work situation now, I probably would have given up my season ticket at the thought of, that's just realistic, and then at a future date, when if my work circumstances change, I'll go and get one back again. But I'm keeping that ticket, and well, going to try and work out a way to keep it next season, because if I got rid of the season ticket, yeah, I'm not going to get... That's not going to... And that's it. If the club are concerned about people hoarding tickets, maybe don't have ticketing policies that massively encourage fans to go, well, I'm not getting rid of this because I'll never get one back because they don't release new season tickets. So, yeah, I don't think they're in a position to complain about ticket hoarding there if people are having fans in the having that seat used every week. And, yeah, where's the incentive to get rid of it? And then you end up with this policy that just ends up looking like a bit of a mess.
Yeah, if I can just add, because I did want to say, because inevitably after this I'll not be happy with the way that I've said something and think of other things that I wish I'd said. I think that the thing that underpins all of this for me and where it still makes me angry as a policy is that feeling that it's not just about, and I'm going to contradict myself, I think, with the general point that I made, it isn't just about getting people in who otherwise wouldn't have a chance. You're always left with that feeling with City that the ultimate goal is bring somebody in who will spend more money in the stadium than you and who is worth more money on a match day. So, yeah, that sense of I don't buy a drink in the stadium, I don't buy food in the stadium, I have my chippy on the walk to the ground, I don't buy a shirt. The only reason that I get a City shirt these days is like if I absolutely love it and I might get it for my birthday or something like that. But I don't put much money into the club other than my season ticket, which happens to be in one of the cheapest areas of the ground as well. So I'm not very valuable to the club. And it's that sense of this policy, if it were to result in me not keeping my season ticket, benefits City by being able to offer it out to somebody who will spend more money. So yeah, I think that's, I maintain my cynicism about it. And I'm really, really conscious that anything I've said isn't to come across as not siding with the fan groups, who I think have very eloquently and brilliantly put these protests together at quite short notice and have been working in to do this in what feels like quite difficult circumstances with City not fully engaging with them for much of the season. So I just really want to be quite explicit on that so that my position is really clear.
Yes. Sorry, just you say that you're not valuable to the club, and you know, maybe you aren't, you know, it would seem you are not valued by certain people making decisions, given the years and years and years of where the ticketing policies and decisions around that have pointed. But it's that classic thing of people knowing the price of everything and the value of nothing.
Absolutely.
Because people like you, and there's loads of you, sort of, you know, family stand lifers, who are massively valuable to the club, who have seen Blackburn 25 years ago and Gillingham before that, and they're all part of that story. And the club are more than happy to put 0161 on the collar of his shirt and release a Wembley 99 away kit. But, like, back that up. Keep those people around. Make sure that's a story that someone sat next to you in the ground can tell, rather than you having to go to the club website and watch Paul Dickoff regurgitate it again. You know, so, really, you know, back that stuff up. You know, all your stuff about your Manchester heritage. Like, people like you, Richard, and fans of that ilk, and older and also younger, people who you know, like, you get to the heart of these things of what is a football club. And, you know, it's a football club based in Manchester, a club of Manchester. Those people being involved and being able to go and being able to have affordable match tickets and have an opportunity to get a season ticket if they want to go, that's hugely valuable. Those, I mean, I know the club had a few bits of stick about tweets they've put out of parents taking kids to games, and they've sort of gone, they've been ratioed, I believe the phrase is. But there was also one of, like, a dad telling the story of, like, his little girl was like, wanted to go to a game for ages. So we went to Salford in the FA Cup. It's like, yeah, you did. And it's amazing the club point that out, because if you've got a child who wants to go and watch City, it's like, can we go to a Premier League game? No. Can we get a season ticket? No. Ah, you might be able to watch them play Gary Neville's Vanity Project in the FA Cup when it's a tenner in. Great. It's like, because that's the only way in. It's
That is my exact experience this year. I've been able to get my son, who is City obsessed, and you know, I've been showing him recently, like, what the Wembley fight, Wembley 99, and, like, say, the Blackburn game and stuff like that, and like, he then, when he plays football, like, he wants to then play those games, like, oh, what was that player called, Daddy? And, you know, I have to be like, try and remember he was playing for bloody Blackburn on the day so I can be the opposition. And yeah, the only games I've been able to get him to are Salford and Plymouth, because there isn't, I suppose, you know, I could have taken him in on Mané for a game because he's young enough to get in for free, but I sit next to the away fans, so most games probably aren't particularly appropriate for him, and all, you know. But yeah, no, I relate to that, and I do look at it thinking, like, I left the Plymouth game thinking, if we don't get a home draw in the quarter final, then I'm looking at the best part of a year before I can get him into a game again. Like, it's not an ideal way to keep the fire burning. Hmm.
Yeah. Does he think Nico O'Reilly's the best player in the world?
Rightly so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Right, well, let's talk about the games coming up. When City face relegated Southampton on Saturday, it'll only be the fourth time in Premier League history that they're going up against a team that's already gone down. Sam Rosbottom is here to talk us through the other three times it's happened.
Pep Guardiola will become the first City manager to face a second game against an already relegated side in the Premier League when he takes his team to Southampton this weekend. The first time he went up against a team that was already heading to the Championship was in lockdown in 2020. During Project Restart, City finished the season with a home game against Norwich, who were bottom of the table and 13 points adrift. With Liverpool already confirmed champions that season, neither side had anything to play for. But ahead of the game, Guardiola had a point to prove after Norwich had won the reverse fixture 3-2 at Carrow Road earlier in the season.
We lost there. That game showed us our inconsistency this season in the Premier League. Last game was the first time we won four games in a row. When 2 years ago we were able to make 18, last season we make 14 to win the Premier League. And we play at one team, like we're maybe not consistent in the box, but the way they play, the way he creates chances. And of course, the last game at home, we want to win.
City did win, and comfortably. It finished 5-0, in a game that was better remembered as David Silva's farewell to the Premier League. But because of COVID, the match was played behind closed doors.
Yeah, it was the smallest, you know, standing ovation all time. But he will come back to receive the standing ovation he deserved for our fans. But I think what the players has done on the pitch and the staff on the players off the pitch show the gratitude, the honor that he has to have for this incredible 10 years that he has done in this club.
David Silva played the previous time City had faced an already relegated side too. This was back in 2013, immediately after Roberto Mancini had been sacked following a loss to Wigan in the FA Cup final. Brian Kidd was in temporary charge as City went to Reading in the midweek, running out 2-0 winners. Kidd spoke to City TV afterwards.
I've got to be honest, if he was to ask me what's gone on in the last 24 hours, to be honest, because it was a shock, you know, to the staff, and, you know, I would have just took the result, as I say tonight. If you'd have said to me before the game, you're going to get 3 points, you're going to clean second place, I've got to be honest, I'd have accepted that.
He said that the win was actually very little to do with him.
I'll credit the players. They're the ones that have had to put up with stuff off the pitch as well. And I'm pleased for them, because it would have been a travesty if they wouldn't have finished second. You know, so it's not me. I mean, I've just come in and, like the... You know, Ferran said, and Cheeky just would have taken the team for two games. So, and my only thing was being a Manchester lad. You know, you can't say no, can you? Would have been able to walk down Market Street if it had turned it down.
That game was an entire decade after the previous time City had played against a team that was already going down. It was April 2003, and it was the first time it had ever happened. As City beat Sunderland 3-0 at Main Road. They were bottom and couldn't finish outside the bottom three.
Acres of space is an Elka. Looking up for the options, one of them's Foley! It had to come. 35 minutes of dominance. And, that it wasn't an Elka, I guess, was the only surprise. Mark Vivian Foley, the first to register. Here's Benabia. Oh, lovely ball, Robbie Fowler, in it goes, and Manchester City with two goals in just over 2 minutes may well already be out of sight of poor old Sunderland. A whole posse of players are arriving. Everybody wants the name on the score sheet today. Belmardi and Foley. Well, it was a subdued celebration in the end. But Manchester City have run this game.
Though nobody knew it at the time, it was a special afternoon in Moss Side. The goals by Mark Vivian Foey, either side of a Robbie Fowler effort, would be the last ever scored at Main Road. Having twice been demoted from the Premier League, City are one of the teams to have played a game after their relegation was confirmed. It happened once as they lost 2-1 to Chelsea at Main Road in May 2001. But as for when the opposition have already gone down, City have won all three of those ties, without even conceding a goal. If that record could continue on Saturday, then City will be in a commanding position in the race for next season's Champions League.
Hi there, this is Joe Royal speaking. You're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast, and carry on doing so.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Sam Rosbottom talking us through City's record against already relegated teams. And gents, you know what that means?
It's a quiz about City and relegation.
There we go. Didn't think you were going to get away with that one, did you?
It's great. Nothing ridiculous ever happens when me and Dom quiz together, so this will be perfect.
Well, there's no David Somer questions, I'm afraid. Richard, I'm going to give you the honour of choosing whether you'd like to go first or second.
First.
Okay, 1 to 6, pick a number.
Number 1, please.
Number 1, who were the first team to be relegated from the Premier League by City when Darius Vassell scored in a 1-1 draw in 2007?
2000. I absolutely do not know. God, Charlton.
No. Dom, any ideas?
I think it's Watford.
It is Watford, yeah. Scored at Vicarage Road, sent them down. Okay, swing and a miss. Dom, over to you. 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6?
5, please.
Number 5. Okay, which team did City effectively relegate during the 2012 run-in as they overhauled United's 8-point lead in the final 6 games?
Wolves.
It was Wolves. Wolves could have stayed up with. I think they needed a 25 goal swing in the final 3 games, but it was effectively down. So 1-0 to Dom. Richard, over to you.
2, please.
Number 2. Who were the opponents the last time City and their opposition were relegated on the same day?
That's got to be Stoke City.
Has it?
Oh.
Is that your answer?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Stoke City, 5-2 on the final day in 1998. 1-1, one, one. Dom.
Massive Chris Tarrant energy there. Number 6, please.
Number 6. Which player ran from the dugout to tell Steve Lomas that a 2-2 draw wasn't good enough to prevent City's relegation against Liverpool in 1996? You're smiling. I think you were there.
I was. It was Niall Quinn.
It was Niall Quinn.
Sans disco pants.
Indeed.
It's a serious matter.
Indeed, a very serious situation demands a very serious dress code. 2-1 to Dom. Richard, over to you. You have questions number 3 or 4 left.
Number 3, please.
Number 3. Which Greater Manchester team is the last already relegated club to win a league game against City?
Oh.
It's more recent than you think as well. I say more recent. We're all millennials here.
To win a league game. Bolton Wanderers.
No. Dom, any ideas?
Is it Stockport?
It is Stockport, 2002.
Oh, this is the Carlton Palmer team. Yeah, that was fun.
Rock bottom of Division 1, somehow beat Kevin Keegan's High Flyers, but yeah.
Wasn't it that's like March annoying. As well? Because they'd been relegated. Cause they, you know, good team this weekend. Yeah. They'd won about 2 games all year, haven't they? Yeah.
Good omens. Dom, that leaves you with question number 4. You've already won, so this is just to seal the 3 points. who scored to put City in front at Ipswich before Ipswich came back to win 2-1 to relegate City at Portman Road in 2001?
It was Sean Gota, David.
It was Sean Gota. There we go.
No, that's 3-1, a good Dom. Omen. Dom taking the points against an already relegated Richard is a good omen for the weekend.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
The Blue Moon Podcast. If City won't let you down on the pitch, let us let you down off it instead.
Lovely stuff. Let's talk about the serious stuff then. Richard, a week before the FA Cup final, no midweek game. There was talk that the Bournemouth game might get slotted into this week, but it hasn't been. That's only a good thing, isn't it? They've got an away tie at a team that's already down and has been practically hopeless all season ahead of the FA Cup final. How badly could this go?
Well, I mean, the potential for it to be a horrific an embarrassing result is always there, because as long as you're playing a game of football, there's always the possibility to lose it. But they've got the option to play strongest team. You would think that they don't need the strongest team to beat Southampton. They shouldn't need the strongest team to beat Southampton, because they are a historically bad Premier League team whose only aim for the season is not to be the worst Premier League team in history. So it could go very badly, because anything less than a win is like just one of the really the worst result you could have this season. But I think it's ideal for City in that to have this kind of game in the running when you need points is you could not handpick a better game other than choosing it to be at home. You can't really ask for more. If you're going to have the FA Cup final before the end of the season, you can't really ask for more than a week's sort of clean run up at it. And yeah, hopefully, and you never sort of want to count your chickens, I guess, but hopefully it's routine enough that start the big hitters and get them off with a good rest time as well before the cup final. And, you know, hopefully a bit of a chance to just play themselves into that, you know, little bit of even better form, because the form is good at the moment, but even better form before the cup final and a bit of a confidence builder for any players who need it.
Yeah, let me read you the table, Dom. I mean, Arsenal now in second on 67 points, only three ahead of City. Go away to Anfield this weekend. Big eyes emoji energy there. But third is City, 64 points. Fourth is Newcastle, 63. Fifth, Chelsea, 63. Sixth, Forest, 61. And seventh, Villa, 60. And Newcastle and Chelsea play each other. So this feels like quite a decisive weekend now. So the maths of it, a City needs 7 points to guarantee third place. They'll only need 6 points if Chelsea and Newcastle ends in a draw this weekend. If Forest lose to Leicester and City win, then they'd only need 1 point to confirm a top five finish. But the goal difference at the minute means that they would pretty much be there already. I said at the start of the show, City feel most in control of this. This feels like the weekend where it could all kind of swing City's way if things go well.
Yeah, took all the jeopardy out of it, haven't they? Disgrace. The Villa win in particular, the Villa win's the one, isn't it? That really, that, you know, that was such a huge week in the season. And I think it wasn't an uncommon view that the people were going Villa at home, a Forest having the season, you know, their best season in a generation in the same week, looked dicey. And yeah, now they're completely in control of the top five race and have a cup final to look forward to. It's I don't think anyone. I mean, obviously, it's as Guardiola's been at pains to say, you can't say you've salvaged season in a good season given the standards they've set and given what they did in the middle of the season. But I think as recently as, like, you know, they went into the international break after that mad game against Brighton. I think if you'd told anybody this would be the situation now in the league and the cup, they'd have been astonished, bitten your hand off.
Yeah. Richard, we talked briefly about Doku in the Wolves game. He was given the chance from the start. He's been coming on and impacting games. He got the assist against Wolves from his start. Does it feel like he's starting to show more of an understanding of what Guardiola wants in a winger? And if so, does that mean that, like, the run-in is there for his kind of for him to impact it now?
Yeah, I think so. I think Dom said earlier that one of the grumbles that we've had about Doku has been end product, and we are unquestionably starting to see some end product from him. I think it's interesting that this has come in a period where he's been used quite a lot as an impact substitute. Obviously, I don't think it applies to the Wolves game, but that his form has picked up and his contributions and end product have picked up from in a phase where he's been able to come on and really affect games, and maybe that has then translated or given him a bit of confidence to do that from the start. I think it does suggest that he's getting it, so to speak. And it's really good to see, because he's such an exciting player to watch. And what you don't want is to be, for want of a better word, carrying somebody who's entertaining but doesn't actually offer enough to the team. But he's, hopefully this isn't like a flash in the pan phase, or I suppose we're back to how long is a phase now. hopefully this is something that sticks, because, like, the reality is that for very few players, like most players in the sort of stage of his career that he's in, they'll be good and bad. Like, nobody is all one thing or the other. And if he's beginning to marry all of the good stuff and address some of the bad stuff, and look a bit more like he knows what his next touch is. Like, that's the thing with Doku, he's so unpredictable that you sometimes get the feeling that he doesn't know what he's going to do next. The idea that you're beginning to marry those two things together and really contribute to the team at a vital part of the season is obviously a good thing.
And Dom, we mentioned Kovacic earlier on, alongside Bernardo in the last few games. Do you think that's the reason why we've not seen too much of Nico Gonzalez lately?
I think the short answer is yeah. I mean, Guardiola's even said a couple of times that he wanted to pick the guys who are familiar with the movements and the patterns, and obviously that does take a little bit of time. I think I expected to see more of Nico Gonzalez, because Guardiola does like to sign people, and, you know, there's the first year under him, there's a learning the ropes. You know, we all remember the first year, 18 months of Rodri, hardly looked Ballon d'Or worthy. At the same time, City seemed to have such a glaring need for someone to play in holding midfield, and it felt a little bit like they'd gone for a lad bought up at Barcelona who can do that job. He can also play further forward as more of a box-to-box guy, but it felt like they'd gone for a bit of a plug-in and play signing, because that was what was required. And the, you know, there was that game against Newcastle where Guardiola got a bit excited and referred to him as mini Rodri. But yeah, I think Kovacic is obviously, he's 2 years further down the line with familiarity with what Guardiola wants. Another player who didn't come out of the winter with a great deal of credit. He does have that tendency to not hold his position in when he's playing as a defensive midfielder. But with Bernardo alongside him, and with the team just generally positionally looking a lot more solid, you can absorb his his tendency to go on a bit of a mad dribble, and sometimes that can result in chances or results in goals that he scores when he lands on his arse, which is a weird quirk he has for all his finishes.
The one where he slid it in. I saw the was it Goodison?
Everton,
The text commentary for that was Kovacic had slid it in, and I was like, oh wait, that must be at the back post, not from the edge of the box. Don't understand how that works.
Yeah, I mean it's the only other City player I can think of slide tackling a ball in, and this was much more apt, was, do you remember Nigel de Jong's goal at Anfield where he lost his footing, so he basically basically slide tackled it into the top corner for about 30 yards. That was fantastic. The thing with Kovacic, like, on the ball, in the small spaces, other Guardiola bingo phrases, he's great at all that. He's terrible at some of the holding position, the out of position stuff. So it's a little bit of a strange one, but in a more stable team with a good Bernardo alongside him, he's looked great. And yeah, that's, you know, you'd hope that this is, you know, it's a time when Nico Gonzalez is learning stuff. And then once, you know, Guardiola did say when Rodri comes back, that's going to help Nico Gonzalez. I mean, the obvious answer is didn't help Calvin Phillips much, did it? So, but I think we've already seen enough of Nico that there's a player there and a player that'll be very useful. But at the moment, he's going with the guys he trusts and the men in form at the end of the season, as he always has done. And Kovacic is definitely one of them.
Yeah. Richard, you mentioned Nico Gonzalez.
Nico Gon Reilly.
Yeah, Nico Gon Reilly. You mentioned Nico O'Reilly before for the first time, struggled a bit against Wolves. Guardiola took him out the firing line. He put Guardiola to left back and Akanji in at centre back. And then as he was going off, Guardiola gave an absolutely massive hug. How do you think he'll organise the defence now for Southampton? Because it would be very easy for him to just go, OK, well, the senior guys get to do it again. But that kind of disregards everything that O'Reilly's done in the last few weeks.
Yeah, O'Reilly's given City so much that I think it would be a shame for Pep to just go back, like, to take all that away for the sake of one underwhelming performance. It wasn't his best. You'd like to think that the quality of player he is and what he has shown to date would suggest that that's an experience that he'll bank and learn from, and rather than that being something that will detract from what is to come from him for the rest of the season in the big games that we've got left, that actually is something that will help him, because he's clearly a very, very clever footballer, and you never want to have a bad game, but it's going to happen. And the surprising thing, I suppose, is that he's had this run and not really had a bad game today. It was maybe ropey in the first, 30 minutes against Palace, maybe. But by and large, his contribution has been so impressive that, if anything, Southampton should be the perfect game to put him back in for and say, go and get that last one out of your system. And overall, like, to have had one bad game, felt the consequences of it in terms of being, essentially, Pep giving a judgment of, I now can't trust you for the rest of this game, and have to take him off, which, you know, is essentially what making a substitution is in those circumstances. But also getting the support and the, you know, like you say, that big hug, like, I'm sure he will have been fully lifted up by a lot of praise and a lot of having it politely pointed out what he could have done better by Pep. Like, there's nobody better to coach him through that, is there? So I would hope that the situation is he gets put back in, and I'd love him to start in the cup final as well, because he's clearly good enough to handle the pressure and play that game, and one bad performance shouldn't take away from that, I would hope.
Dom, how do you see it going? Because like, Guardiola could easily lean on the seniors, but if you want a game to bring the kids' confidence back, it's Southampton away, probably, isn't it?
Yeah, and the thing is, for all that it was like, you know, O'Reilly had this dreadful game against Wolves, he had it was a very bad 5 minutes. It was like two passes he gave away where Guardiola goes, right, you're coming off. But the thing is, Guardiola also did that to Gundogan later in the game. You know, one of his all time favourite guys was like, right, that was shit, off you come.
Off you come.
So they'll do that. I mean, you know, we don't know what he said to O'Reilly when he hugged him. I mean, hopefully it wasn't, I'll see you against Wydad Casablanca, pal. But I reckon you're right. Also, talking of guys he loves Manu Akanji. He's versatile. He can play anywhere across the back four. He can play anywhere in the back four, depending on what they're doing with the fullbacks, inside, outside, all the rest of it. You know, he can play centre-back if they want Guardiola bombing up the line. He can play either fullback position as he did in the treble run. Loves Akanji. I think I agree with you. I think the fact it's Southampton, might do Nico O'Reilly a favour.
Does if the this fact was... that there's a cup final the weekend after do him a disfavour, though? That's not a word, but you know what I mean.
Disservice is a word, let's go with that. maybe, but also that's a final against Crystal Palace, who he was outstanding against a few weeks ago. And also, he was good in the period of that game when City were a total shambles as well. Mm. It's always tricky with the young guys at City that it can feel like you can put in six great performances and then they show a little bit of that vulnerability they have to work through. There's always an option to take them out of the firing line. But I just think O'Reilly's been so good since the international break. Like him, you know, him coming on at Bournemouth is the moment the form ticks up. It's completely that. Yeah. Now, how does he look in a team with Haaland reintegrated back into it is something that everyone's going to have to look at. But hopefully he's put enough credit in the bank that it isn't a see you against Wydad Casablanca situation. Yeah.
Right, so let's get a Southampton view on the game now. I've been speaking to Glenn Delacour from the Total Saints podcast about their season. Now, the convention in radio is that you edit out the first question that you've asked and you start on the guest's first answer. But I've left mine in here just to get a real full vibe of how this interview started. So, Glenn, I mean, where to start, really, with this season? what's happened?
I think we've become an exhibit of the problem that exists with teams getting promoted now, in that there's so many things that have got to go in your favour to even be able to compete, I mean, with the three teams all being spectacularly relegated with about six games to go, and the same thing happening last season, and I'd put money on it happening next season as well, no matter what Leeds and their fans and supporters might think. It's just incredibly difficult. You have got to get every transfer decision you make right. There's limited amount you can spend because of PSR rules, so even if you've got pots of money, you can't really spend it. And I think players are realising this now. So there are players that are just out of reach because they don't want to. I mean, back in the day, I think a lot of players would have been quite happy to join a newly promoted club to play in the Premier League. But we certainly got knocked back by a few people because people could obviously see the struggle that was coming. And to be honest, I've been around the block a few times watching this team, and I accepted it in about October that we were going to get relegated, and more or less since then, but absolutely since about January, February, I've just been waiting for the season to end, really, and having three games left now, we're nearly there, but we've got to play Manchester City and Arsenal in two of our last three. So it's just been absolutely brutal, to be honest.
Yeah. Is the spectre of that Derby points total, is that like haunting you, or is it hanging over you? Or like in a weird, perverse way, is it kind of like it doesn't really matter? Now that you've at least matched them, it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter much to me, to be honest, because the way I see it is that, you know, I'm a supporter, I pay me money, I turn up. It's not my fault we're crap. I would like to think, you know, the club and these players will carry it around with them. But you know what the modern day footballer is like. They probably won't care. A number of them will move on. Some of them, ironically, will stay in the Premier League despite having proved they're not up to it. Some of them will get a gig in the Premier League next year, and that's you know, so maybe they'll care, maybe they won't. It doesn't bother me that much, but I know it seems to bother younger people more, even those who may not even have any memory of Derby. It was the Robbie Savage days, wasn't it? So it was a while ago. Can't remember what it was. 2007?
2007, 2008, I think it was. 2007,
was it? Yeah. So it doesn't bother me that much. You know, at the end of the day, we're getting relegated. So are Leicester, so are Ipswich. It doesn't really, you know, it doesn't matter whether you finish flat last or 18th. You know, you're still in the same boat. You're in the Championship next year. And I think because of the parachute payments, you start, you know, with a bit of an advantage over the other teams that are down there. So I just want it. all over with and get started, because there's obviously a massive rebuild needed once you go down. So it doesn't bother me that much. Long answer to a short question.
Is there kind of hope for next season on that front? Because like you're a team that's, you know, you've been up, you've been down, you've been up, been down. You know the Championship, and you know the difficulty of getting out of the Championship. There's that, you can't take that for granted, but at the same time, there is experience in the club there of having come up and been able to get promotion.
You would have thought so, but you know, you're assuming you're not going to make the same mistakes twice, and we've certainly proved ourselves to be pretty adept at not learning the lessons. But the last couple of times we've been in the Championship, so last season and when we came up through the league, so we went League One, Championship, Premier League. We were only in Championship one season, so we've had two Championship campaigns in relatively recent memory, and we've got promoted both times. So, but because we had last season, we kind of know what it takes. You know that, because, I mean, we got relegated pretty pathetically 2 years ago, and we still managed to build a team on not much money that was competing at the top end of the division. And yes, we came fourth and went up through the playoffs. But, you know, it's fresh in everyone's mind what the Championship is like, whereas I think it was 2010 we were in there before, so many people will have forgotten. I mean, you get a lot of fans who are like, well, I'm not renewing my season ticket if we're not in the Premier League. Hang on, it's actually better. It's more fun. You know,
you win more.
You win some games. You actually score some goals at home. And if you let in a crap goal, like we tend to do, then it doesn't tend to be terminal for the, you know, for the game that you're watching. So, I personally, I'm looking forward to it again. Now, you've got to look forward to something given the season that we're having. So I'm looking forward to it. And we've got a derby against Portsmouth, which would be nice. You know, I mean, that is fun. You know, it's a game that doesn't come around that often, and it really is a filthy rivalry between the two clubs. So that will be that will actually be something to look forward to. And but obviously we don't want to lose that one. And I would rather that game didn't come around at the start of the season. I'd rather we had a couple of months to sort of bed in, because we're going to be a new team next year. And yeah, bring on the Championship. No VAR, none of that rubbish. And I think most Saints fans have got to look forward to it. But it's a really weird situation now, because, I mean, some people were saying it when we were in the playoff final last time, you know, if we go up, it's going to be miserable. And they've been proved to be correct. And that's the thing. But as you know, you want your football team to do as well as possible. So, you know, if we're going well at the tail end of next season and we're up in the playoff places or in the automatic spots, you've got to go for it and embrace it and just hope that the decisions that are made and the money that is spent is done better than it has been this year.
Yeah. What's it been this year? Because I think back to that game at the Etihad earlier in the season. I must admit, I've not seen a whole lot of Southampton. But you gave City a really good game that day. And you really caused City a lot of problems that day. And I remember feeling like if that's the sort of team Southampton are, then they should be all right. And then it just isn't the team that you've been all season.
No. Well, we've had three managers, you know, which is the surefire sign of a team that's going to get relegated. So we have Russell Martin, who had a very distinct style of play, wanted to play a certain way, always wanted to play out from the back. It worked in some games in that if we didn't give away a stupid goal, then we could keep the ball and you know, put teams under pressure. And we let in an early goal at City. And of course, we all thought, oh, here we go, 9-0 or something. And it didn't happen, and we kept the ball and played really well. But the main issue is we've had no goal threat all season. So we can keep the ball, and we'll, at the start of the season, we could keep the ball, and then we'd work the ball up to the wings, and then there'd be no one in the middle, or there'd be no one breaking into the box. We seem to become over-obsessed with keeping the ball. And at the end of the day, the point is to keep the ball and give the ball to your attacking players in a way that they can take it on and have a shot at goal. But we never quite got that side of things right. I blame Pep Guardiola for all this, of course, because Russell Martin was, you know, a disciple of his, and he wanted to, you know, he obviously bought into the Pep way of playing. But it basically doesn't work when you haven't got very, very good players. And we could do it in the Championship because relatively we had better players than most of the opposition. But you go out and I don't know if you remember our first game of the season, we played Newcastle away, which is obviously a very tough game. They had a player sent off after half an hour, and we really should have won that game. But what did we do? Our goalkeeper passed the ball straight to Isak, 6 yards out, one pass, goal, and 1-0. And that was our season under Russell Martin, set in stone after six minutes or whatever of that particular game. And we've never really recovered. So the second manager, even Juric, he favoured a more direct approach, but that... Yeah, you go from one star to another. You haven't really got the players.
You can't just switch it mid-season, can you?
To do it, yeah. No. It's very difficult. And in some respects, we look better. But then we'd have a game against like Brentford, where we get beat 5-0, and it's like, what happened there? So he was pretty clueless. Didn't really adapt to the English game. His signature tactic was like man-for-man marking in defence. So you literally had your left-back following players all over the pitch, and that doesn't work in the English game. So we got some heavy beatings. And then the third manager, Simon Rusk, he's basically all about defence. So the game on Saturday, we will try and stifle the hell out of it, but we're not good enough to do it, basically. So it's very unlike, unless City have a bit of a shocker, it's very unlikely that they won't score. So we still have got nothing at the top end of the pitch, and that was set in stone from the end of the first transfer window, because our forwards recruitment were kind of like Ryan Fraser, Cameron Archer, Ben Burritt and Diaz. They're all championship level. None of them are good enough to score goals in the Premier League. And two of them were loaned out in January. They were that bad. So yeah, we kind of knew certainly from January that this wasn't happening this season. And let's get to the end.
Three games left. What do you want to see from these three games? Is there anything that will give you some sort of kind of hope for the future for next season?
Next season is going to be so different. When you know, gone are the days of you go down, you keep the same team, you try and come back up again. Those days are gone. So I think the next three games are largely irrelevant. It would be nice. The last game is Arsenal at home. If you could win that, at least it would send the fans away for the summer having had a good day. Do you know what I mean? The way I've been looking at it for the last few weeks is that, you know, we want the odd good day. Okay, enough people are worried about the Derby points record that it would be nice to get another point in the last three games just to put that one to bed. As I say, it doesn't bother me that much, but it would be nice for the general feeling of the fans. I don't think a lot will really play into next season. We've had a couple of youngsters who've sort of like come on the last couple of weeks who obviously are going to play a more prominent role next season. But if you look at the squad we've got, 33, 34 players, there could be as many as 17, 18 leaving. So, you know, there's a few out of contract. There's a few that would just go. Some, like Adam Lallana, for example, is going to retire. We've got loan players going back. So there's going to be a hell of a lot of churn. So I don't really anticipate it having much bearing on next season at all.
Yeah. Well, Glenn, we've got a charity bet coming up a bit later on. I always like to hand my prediction over to our guests. So okay. what will your score prediction be for this game?
To be brutally honest, I think, you know, with City still trying to confirm the Champions League spot for next season through the league, there's no way that they're going to be taking it easy. And I always find when he plays us, Pep always does take it seriously for some reason. I don't think there's ever, even with us being as bad as we've been this season, I don't think there'll ever be a danger of him, taking the foot off the gas. And but even if he does rest a few players, the players that clubs like City have got in the reserves, in the youth team, whatever, they if you take any one of them, put them in our team, he'd be our best player. So that's the kind of levels we're talking about here. So I think it'll be fairly comfortable for City. We might put up a bit of a fight in the first half, but as the game goes on, I just don't see us. You know, when the subs come on, that's always when we fall away, because whenever we bring subs on, we get weaker. Whereas even your clubs in the, you know, the ones that are traditionally down near the, you know, Fulham, Brentford, Palace, teams like that, when they bring subs on, they will make their team better. And that's the huge problem that the promoted sides have got, because the traditional lower half sides have all got so much stronger. I guess PSR stops the big clubs taking all their players like it used to back in, you know, when we were decent, Liverpool took all our players and we couldn't do much about it. Whereas now Crystal Palace can keep like Eze, Mateta and Sarr, and they've got a better forward line than Manchester United. You know, that sort of thing just wouldn't be possible a few years ago. So I'll give it 3-0 to City.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
Email the show through our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
That was Glenn Delacour. Dom, some big moments against Southampton in the past. Sterling's winner, Jesus, 100 points. King Clancy, solo goal. Mane making a fool out of Kolarov. There's, like, big games.
I'll dredge one from the in-between times as well. Do you remember when, I think it might have been the first year at St Mary's, Paolo Wanchope scored a late goal, I think.
Oh, the microphone, that. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, why had no one ever done that before Paolo Wanchope? grabbed the pitside boom mic and just went, down it. That was, yeah.
What a day.
What a great thing to do.
And last time they won that season for about 100 years. back to form on the charity bet last week. No correct predictions. We're on £1,365 for the season so far, which makes this our best ever season on the charity bet. William Hill has given us three £10 correct score singles. The winnings are going to the Man City fans food bank support group. Let's see if we can increase the total now. We've already heard from Glenn. He's gone for a 3-0 Southampton defeat. That is 15-2 and £75 if he's right. Richard, what are you having?
City 4, Southampton 0.
That is 10-1 and £100 if you are right. Richard, we've had Wi-Fi problems on this call. Unfortunately, you're going to have to go now. So thank you very much for being in the show.
Thank you very much, David. Appreciate it.
And Dom, now that Richard's gone, we can safely say that you originally wanted 3-0, but Glenn has cruelly snatched that away from you. So what have you modified it to?
Well, then I wanted 4-0 and Richard wanted that. So I've gradually got pushed towards a more offensive prediction because I don't see Southampton scoring it. And I could have gone 2-0, but it's a charity, isn't it? You know, so... And you're going to tell me now that the odds for 2-0 are longer than 5-0. Whatever.
I don't know, I didn't check them.
I've gone for 5-0, which hopefully brings a bit in if it comes in.
Yeah, 18-1, 180 quid if you are right. You've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information on responsible gambling, take a look at begambleaware.org. Now, this week marks 25 years since City won promotion at Ewood Park. It was an extraordinary game where Blackburn took the lead and hit the post and bar four times before City came back to win 4-1. If you've not listened already, take a look earlier on your feed because we did a special documentary episode released on the anniversary, hearing from the players and the management involved at that time. Before we move on, on, I just wanted to get your memories of this game. Now, obviously, this would have been ideal if we'd been able to do it before Richard had to leave, but we can only do the just the two of us, Dom. Obviously, I've spent the last year or so just engrossed in this game, and I think that maybe clouds my judgment a little bit, because I genuinely think this might be... Mark Kennedy's goal to make it 3-1, I think, is my favourite City goal of all time. And I don't, obviously, in the light of Rodri against Inter, of Aguero against QPR, Dickhoff against Gillingham, you know, Gundogan against Villa, that is a big thing to say. But, like, I think it just is.
Yeah, it was, I think I might have said this before on a Patreon show. So I was in the away end that day. Because, you know, to bring it full circle and talk about ticket policies, that was at the time when if you had a ticket stub from an away game from, you know, random away game 6 months earlier, that helped you, I think, to get an away ticket. And, you know, me and my dad weren't regular away game attendees by any stretch, but I think the corresponding ticket stub was Wolves away, where a friend of the family went to that and watched them get smashed to bits on Molineux on a Friday night, who couldn't make it to the Blackburn game. So we had a ticket stub and went, so didn't have to come in off the hill or anything. I had a massive big inflatable banana that did get me in the evening news on the Monday. There's like just in the background. I would have been, what, 13 years of age? I think the banana was about as tall as me, so my inflatable rather than myself was in the newspaper. Yeah, it was an incredible day. And so the Kennedy goal is because... And I think Kennedy says this on the documentary. He seems like a fantastic interviewee, by the way.
I loved interviewing him, honestly.
Yeah. That was when it was like, right, this is completely home and hose now. Because at that point, Blackburn would have needed to score three times. And it's done then. It's completely done. And yeah, I think that it's the first time I ever remember welling up with tears about something that wasn't having a temper tantrum as a child. Like, the first time I ever did, like, happy growing up sort of welled up a bit. And yeah, football's, you know, done that. Football and other more important things have done that to me since. But that's one for Mark Kennedy, I guess.
I think why it tips it for me is it's the first time in my life, like, at any stage of my life, where I feel like City overachieved that season.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was going to say, so... And I've probably told you this before as well. So when you know, everyone went on the pitch at the end, and I was standing there with my dad, who like isn't generally a guy for sort of big, profound statements, but he said to me, he said, "Look around. This is the greatest thing this club's ever accomplished." Now, bearing in mind, my dad went to his first game in 1966, so he sort of was all aboard the Mercer Allison train as a kid, and he saw all that, saw all those wonderful players, those great teams. But his contention for it, and I think it was something Mark Kennedy touched upon in your interview, of like, he put the game on, he was like, "Do you see that Blackburn team? You know, City did something that they were not expected to do." In terms of, you know, that was the team that came up from...
They weren't the second best team in that division by a long shot, yeah.
It was the Division 2, as was shown in the Premier League season the year after, it was a Division 2 team on the crest of an unbelievable wave, and they overachieved. They should have been mid-table at best, that side. And they achieved something incredible. And I think that was my dad's contention at the time, that this is, you know, that's why it's the best. It's not Lee Bell and Somerby, because that team did amazing things, but they were an amazing team. And amazing teams do amazing things. This was a group of guys who picked themselves up off the floor and gone through, you know, there's various English footballing backquarters people like to name check. There were 40,000 away at York or whatever. You know, they did that. And I think about that thing my dad said quite a bit, because obviously now we've seen teams win trebles, and obviously it's a totally different scale of achievement, like doing a 100-point season, winning such a massive run of trophies. Like you've seen with City this season, like how hard it actually is to just do that no margin for error stuff and just win all the competitions. It's absurd, but what you can't say is City aren't expected to win those trophies insofar, not all of them all at once, that's mad, but they're always... first, second, or third favourite for everything they're in. I'd love to see the odds for promotion at the start of that Championship season, because City wouldn't have been there. So, yeah, in terms of an overachievement, in that respect, it remains unmatched, and Kennedy's goal is the one that seals that overachievement, I guess.
Yeah. I still, honestly, whenever it's on telly, I put it on. I genuinely still have a little cry at that point. I can't help myself. It just takes me back to being, I think I was 12 at the time. It just takes me back to those emotions on that day, and like finally seeing the football club that I loved just achieve something. And it achieved something that wasn't, oh, you've got yourself out of the absolute pits of despair. And the Gillingham game is obviously, like, it lives long in the memory because of the circumstances. But let's be honest, it was a brilliant solution to a problem that should never have existed. Whereas Blackburn was just a brilliant solution. And that, I can't help it. And I just love that game. Go and give that special episode a listen. It's available on the Blue Moon podcast feed right now, and is the one before this episode. So if you're not giving it a listen, go and do that. We're going to finish with a very quick listener question. Get in touch at bluemoonpodcast.com on Blue Sky. Contact at bluemoonpodcast.com on the emails. Adam got in touch to say, I was pleased to see Jamie Carragher being given a taste of his own medicine over the Trent Alexander-Arnold news. Hopefully he might think twice before telling some City fans how they should be feeling in future. I've actually got the clip, so let's have a quick listen, Dom.
This thing that I've been reading throughout the day, obviously when the news breaks, and you've got the reaction of Liverpool supporters, which are different. Some people wish him all the best, some people are really angry, some people are somewhere in the middle. I'm probably one of the ones who was somewhere in the middle. But I'm sick all day of reading about journalists or other people who have got no affiliation to Liverpool telling Liverpool supporters how they should feel. They're not Liverpool supporters. Liverpool as a city and a football club is very emotional, and that's what makes us what we are. And that's why you see the scenes that you saw last week when Liverpool won the league. You don't really see those scenes for a team winning the league because we are emotional. Football means a lot to us. So I just wanted to just mention that I don't think people out there should be telling Liverpool supporters how they should feel. Liverpool supporters, like Trent, as Trent's going to Real Madrid, he can do what he wants. It's his career. Fine, good luck to him. But Liverpool supporters can also feel how they want about this situation.
Oh my God, that man has some balls.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I agree with him that telling football fans how to feel about their club is, you know, it's a fool's errand. And I look forward to him sticking to that the next time the overlap fan debate discusses the 1-1-5 verdict. and he starts shouting at people about time barring. I totally agree with that premise. Obviously, I mean, of course, as a pundit, as a journalist, as whatever, you have to have opinions on what teams do, what players do, whether it's certain rules are right or wrong and clubs conform to them or otherwise. But you have got to be very careful about don't go around telling fans what they think. But it's so interesting to hear that because I genuinely think, you know, Manchester City fans have previously read articles about how they don't enjoy winning trophies anymore. You know, how they didn't enjoy winning the Champions League final enough. How they, it's embarrassing when they go on the pitch when they win the league.
It's even in that clip there where he says, I mean, he says there about Liverpool winning the title. You don't see scenes like that for other teams winning the league. Like,
well, I believe all the crossbars were intact at Anfield the other day, so, you know, that's something. And listen, I'm not saying you have to invade the pitch or you're a fraud. Let's be honest, given far more serious things than anything Jamie Carragher will ever talk about, there are very good reasons Liverpool fans will not want to be seen to be running on football pitches, unfortunately, because of terrible, terrible things that have happened with how fans have been treated in England and in that city that are far more serious than anything we're talking about here. But, yeah, it's... Yeah, it's crazy. It's, I mean, the lack of self-awareness is like Olympian levels. Because, you know, he definitely will. I know there was Everton fans were quick to sort of dredge up some tweets he did about Anthony Gordon and saying that, oh, lad who saved from relegation, came through the youth system, getting you 40 million euros. Euros? Whatever currency Newcastle are paying in. Steady. so he did that and it's like, come on. Yeah, so no, I hopefully he's hit upon a thing that telling fans how to feel. Listen, if fans are behaving in an abhorrent way, a violent way, a racist way, tell them to stop doing that.
Yeah, but, crack on.
Yeah, but there's all those little intangibles, like, and one again, an element of truth he hit upon before he went into it means more bullshit of like, you know, it's a diff, you know, yeah, Liverpool is an emotional city about football, but you know, so is Bradford. Have you seen Bradford this week?
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
It's incredible. Everyone's football team means the most to them. So if there's a light bulb gone off in his head, then all the best. But an incredible messenger for that sentiment.
Yeah. Did you notice as well the way he said journalist was exactly the same way that Cilla Black said it when they revealed a journalist on Blind Date?
Surprised any journalist ever had to go on Blind Date because we're all just such fantastic catchers.
Excellent. Right. Well, we're going to leave it there, Dom. Thank you very much for today. Thanks for listening to this week's Blue Moon podcast. Thank you to my guests, Richard Burns and Dom Farrell.
Thanks, mate.
There's a clip of this week's Nostalgia Show coming up shortly. That was a look at the title running from 2014, taking in memories from all of City's opponents, plus some who were involved in results elsewhere as well. The full thing is available now from patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. I'll be back next week to preview the FA Cup final. See you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
A little bit of a scramble, and our goalkeeper was Manoni at the time, makes a bit of a hash of it, and you probably thought as City fans it was a massive 2 points drop.
It was very, very satisfying how at Anfield, Mourinho's Chelsea, Gerrard slipping up, like all of those narrative things that I think came together to make it such a good day.
Everton don't beat City. I mean, that's a massive coup for us to come to. That stage of the season, you know, don't get me wrong, but it's always seemed to be the try and stop Liverpool from going on to win it rather than, you know, Everton have got plenty to play for themselves.
And then the guilt hit us when we saw Suarez in tears.
Oh, don't feel good. It's Luis Suarez. You don't feel guilty about that.
It was just awful. It was like, oh dear, we made someone cry. And then it was just like, yeah, just screaming at him.
Yaya Toure just running through our team and sort of putting the cherry on the cake to make it 4-0. You know, Villa held out for quite a while in that game, surprisingly.
Well, it was 0-0 at half time. And I remember, like, there was an actual palpable feeling of the tension being lifted when Dzeko scored. It was about an hour into the game.
It just felt a bit like City just feel like they have a little bit more, whereas Liverpool were relying on emotion.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast and join us again next time for another episode.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with Smart Card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.